Fan pregame, the gang is all back together. We'll get into it. I didn't get scouted by the LPGA, but I am still
not
TV
yet,
host. big night in sports tonight, of course. Kicking things off with our first guest in a couple of minutes here, DJ Bean of the What Chaos Show. Panthers-Rangers game 5 tonight, 8 p.m. on Sportsnet.
NBA Finals could be decided tonight, or at least the participants, but the Dallas Mavericks will have to win as underdogs on Sportsnet 1 in order to advance. We'll chat a little Western Conference Final in Best Bets later in the show.
The verdict is in.
Which verdict?
We might have the best 14 months in professional women's hockey lore. First overall pick, first overall PWHL champion, first ever playoff MVP, Taylor Heise joins us around 6:20.
Yeah, and two appearances on the fan pregame added to the CV. We'll do a little Canadian Open update, maybe talk about the Pro-Am just a little bit. Blue Jays City Connect jerseys released this evening. Talk about that a little bit.
We're going to be there. Don't bury the lead.
Well, I don't know.
We're going to see the jerseys in person.
Yeah, we'll see there. We'll be there. And Best Bets also to come, as mentioned a little earlier.
Okay, before we get DJ Bean on, you had a really great look into tonight's action and why some of the stars are maybe not getting the star-studded anger or vitriol or coverage that some other markets
are. Yeah, well, I guess we're a little bit more connected to Edmonton, the Edmonton media, and what's going on with the Oilers. But yeah, Connor Brown, and everybody has to come out, and like everyone and their dog from Connor Brown saying that they're coming at Darnell Nurse. And yeah, the Eastern Conference Final continues tonight on Sportsnet. And I don't know if the New York media has gone soft. I don't know if the fan base is just a little bit more apathetic than the other markets. But I feel like there's a disproportionate amount of heat on players outside of the core group for the Blue Shirts not getting the job done. Mika Zibanejad, 0 points in the series, began with 14 points in the first 10 games of the playoffs. Chris Kreider, same thing, 0 points in the series. Panarin has 3 assists. But I think he's been ghost-like. Mm-hmm. And Adam Fox has been, you know, pretty underwhelming the entire playoffs. So the New York Rangers got to find it, right? Everyone kind of knows that this is what's going on right now. But yeah, what if it was Edmonton? What if the Edmonton meet, if you want to go by Kevin Bieksa, was on the New York Rangers right now? How toxic things could be? Because yeah, there should be a lot of heat on these guys. 2 wins away from going to the Stanley Cup final. And the stars haven't shown up, so we'll see if they can do that at Madison Square Garden tonight.
And those stars specifically, Mika Zibanejad, Chris Kreider, they had at least 10. They had more than a point per game in the previous two series, right? So it's not like you've been wanting for the whole time. It's like now the going gets harder, and where are your stars? Your stars have to be stars in order to win. They still are lucky enough to be tied 2-2 in this series.
Unless Alexis Lafreniere is just the star now for the New York Rangers, and Shesterkin's doing his thing.
It took a lot of for him to get to this point too, right? A lot of people said he was a bust, like, well, you know, whatever.
Where are those people on Mika right now?
It's time. It might be time. As a Rangers guy myself, maybe we got to start it. Okay, let's bring in DJ Bean, host of What Chaos Show. How's it going, DJ?
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
Welcome to, I guess, a little Eastern Conference, Western Conference preview as well. But let's start with what's on tonight. We got Florida and New York, of course, an 8 p.m. puck drop. We were just talking about how, I guess, maybe a disproportionate amount of attention or frustration with some of the Edmonton stars. When you look at the way that the New York Rangers stars haven't shown up, Chris Kreider, Mika Zibanejad, Artemi Panarin, and maybe the New York media needs to really give it to these guys for them to show up. Have you seen the same kind of, I guess, difference that we have?
Oh, I mean, if anything, Ailish, you're bang on the Chris Kreider and especially the Mika Zibanejad thing. But going to the Western Conference, like Connor McDavid, I know that he hasn't really been under too much scrutiny, but at least in the second round, people were asking, is he hurt? What's wrong with him? Why does he only have, I think, 7 points in 7 games, something like that? And now he's going off as he's facing a more difficult opponent. The games are getting harder. You're getting deeper into the postseason. Connor McDavid is getting better. For a team like the Rangers, you need Mika Zibanejad to be not just, I mean, typically he's a star for you, of course, but he's been a detriment. It's not just the not scoring goals, not registering points. It's the turnover at the blue line to end a game, essentially, that led to that Blake Wheeler penalty that resulted in the game-winning goal for the Florida Panthers. So not only are the Rangers star players, with the exception of course, guys like Igor Shesterkin, not not being a net positive. They're kind of being a net negative right now.
Yeah, I wonder. I mean, obviously, the Panthers have a great deal of influence on how this is all playing out, and they've been kind of chasing the series and kind of chasing games, and therefore, maybe that's affecting the flow of the game just a little bit and what we see from the Stars. But it also feels like the Panthers can just have this effect. Like, Boston is not a team built on superstar talent, aside from David Pastrnak, at least up front. And yeah, the Panthers kind of did the same thing to the Rangers in that, or to the, with the Bruins, where it's like, okay, Boston's just waiting to counter. Is it like, I know this is a copycat league sometimes, and maybe the Rangers are trying to do what Boston was doing and was successful with, but just at a greater level because they're probably a more talented team. But is it just kind of the Panthers doing it a certain way where they're just able to take Mika Zibanejad and Artemi Panarin out of the spots that they're most successful and make them play defense all night?
Yeah, the Panthers make teams crazy. And if anything, through two games, I thought, okay, I respect the Bruins more than maybe I should have this postseason, because there were moments where you thought, man, some of the Bruins' top offensive players, Pavel Zacha, guys like that. I know that Pavel Zacha is not supposed to be one of a team's top offensive player, but really he was a top six forward for them and a first or second line center for most of the season. And he didn't seem to have much of an impact in that series until really the game seven. But it's what the Panthers do. They get in the offensive zone, they get a scoring chance, and it seems like they always get the puck back. If they were a basketball team, they would be cleaning the offensive glass at all times, to the point where you get so frustrated and you're screaming at your TV, can you just get a rebound? The Panthers, once they get in the offensive zone, they get set up and they stay there for a while. And I don't know of any really other team that's left in the postseason that can have such sustained pressure where chance after chance, they keep retaining possession. And that's obviously going to make star players on the other side go quiet just because they're not going to have the puck as much. But maybe it also gets in those offensive players' heads where they think, boy, if I'm having the puck, let's say 70% of how often I usually have it, I really got to make a play every time I have it. And that's how teams end up making mistakes.
Yeah, Florida goes to a Stanley Cup final and meets like Edmonton maybe more aptly. Like, they might feel like the shackles are completely off, because you go from Boston, whose best player is probably David Pastrnak, but maybe Jeremy Swayman, where they're just trying to protect their best player in Swayman. The same thing happening here with the Rangers, where it's just like, hey, let's Igor be Igor and make it really, really frustrating to score goals. If you get past that, all of a sudden you're playing Edmonton. They might just be feeling completely liberated in a Stanley Cup final. But again, long way to go before we get there. Standing in their way will be Alexis Lafreniere. This has been his coming out party. I guess it's coming in contrast to what we're seeing from Mika Zibanejad, Artemi Panarin, Chris Kreider, and the like. But what have you seen from Alexis Lafreniere? Why has it suddenly clicked? And what do you make of this breakout he's having on the postseason stage?
I mean, no one wants to hear it, but Lafreniere supporters have said he has been steadily improving year after year, month after month, week after week, game after game. And when it's a first overall pick and they don't become a franchise player, I think it's easy to say, oh, okay, well, then if they're not this, they're this. And that just wasn't really the case with Alexis Lafreniere. He's gotten better year after year, and really just within this series, think of how long away he's come. He contributes to an own goal that was mainly Igor Shesterkin's fault in game one. But from there, he's been an impact player, multi-goal games, something that the Rangers need, because not only is Mika Zibanejad not showing up, not only is Chris Kreider having a relatively quiet go of it, the Panthers are just a better team this series than the Rangers are overall. They've been controlling the play. You look at all the advanced stats, you would have thought that the Panthers would have won the last two games going away. Instead, they both go to overtime and the teams end up salvaging a split. The Rangers right now are kind of hanging on thanks to their goaltender and complementary pieces. I don't know if Lafreniere is a complementary piece, but a non-superstar piece who pretty quickly is becoming a superstar.
All right, we got this game a little later on our network, 8 p.m. Hopefully not another overtime for you guys, because I know you love your OT streams, and there's been three straight ones.
I don't love them. I will clarify, we don't love them anymore. It was something that we decided we would do going into the postseason. Every time a game goes into overtime, we stream until it ends. The anxiety that I have watching these games, it can be 1-1 late in the first period, and I'm like, oh, no. Do I have to keep myself put together? Yeah. or 3 hours from now, whatever it may be. But I digress.
Well, you might see another one tonight. We'll give you enough time to prep for that. Let's talk about this Oilers Stars game, though, because you're an Oilers guy. Welcome, because I think all of Canada's trying to be Oilers fans. How did you get upon the fandom of the Edmonton Oilers?
Well, it's a combination of loving players they have and being a massive fan of the, I believe, 2007 Paul Thomas Anderson film, There Will Be Blood. If you're familiar with that movie, just a great performance from Daniel Day-Lewis. He's an oil man, and I just love the whole aesthetic of it. Obviously, so I covered the Boston Bruins for a long time, so I knew Peter Chiarelli, and I always thought that he was maybe a little underappreciated as a general manager. So when he went to Edmonton, I was pulling for him to have success. And I've been just keeping tabs on them year after year. I'm also a Los Angeles Chargers fan. So I've just got a thing for kind of chaotic teams. Yeah. And there is no more chaotic, endearing team in the world, maybe, than the Edmonton Oilers. So I've been rooting for them for a number of years, and we talk about the whole oil man thing and make a big thing of that on What Chaos. But yeah, truly, like, I've watched every game this season, huge fan. I've always loved Leon Draisaitl. Zach Hyman, I thought, was a better signing at the time than people were allowing for, and now it's been a great signing. I'm a Stu Skinner guy. Love Gene Principe. Yeah. He's a regular on the podcast. So there's just so many things. We love Hunter. There are so many things about the Oilers that make them lovable. And I hope that Canada is rightfully rallying behind this team.
Okay, so you're a dyed-in-the-wool Oilers fan, which means you have to hate Darnell Nurse, right?
So not hate Darnell Nurse, concerned for Darnell Nurse, rooting for Darnell Nurse. And I was one of many people who must have been yesterday or 2 days ago declared, Darnell Nurse is playing terrible hockey, maybe the worst hockey of his career. Forget plus minus. I'm not a big plus minus guy, but he was on the ice for 18 goals against at 5-on-5 entering last night. He's now on the ice for 20 goals against at 5-on-5 entering last night, after that game, which is the most of any player in the postseason. So he is playing poorly. You then combine that with the fact that he does make $9.25 million. The conversation has to be had of, is this a struggling player or is this player just not that good? And given that he's kind of struggled all season, I think it's a fair conversation to have. Is he going to be the promising player that he once was, or is this going to be an albatross of a contract? I think there's respectful ways to have that conversation. Hopefully we had that conversation in a respectful way. I know there was a lot of conversation as to whether the Edmonton media was treating him fairly. I personally think if a player is playing poorly, of course, it should be noted that they're playing poorly. Mm-hmm. No personal shots should be taken. Darnell Nurse seems like a great person. So leave all that stuff out of it. The conversation, though, of, oh my God, the Oilers don't have a lot of good defensemen, and one of their good defensemen is playing very poorly, I thought was correct. So happy to see him with an assist on that Ryan McLeod goal yesterday. Hopefully he gets going.
Yeah, credit to him, though, because it doesn't go well off the bat yesterday. All the heat on him, two goals really quickly going into the back of his net, or at least he's helping pull it out of the back of his net. And then he played pretty well, I thought, over the balance of that game and helping the Oilers to a 2-2 series deadlock. You have to love your coach, Chris Knobloch. I mean, he's made some really, really difficult decisions, some bold decisions. Pickard pays off, and last night it pays off going to Corey Perry, previously unplayable, at least I thought. I thought he was great in game four. And of course, Ryan McLeod gets the goal coming back into the lineup. What is it about Chris Knobloch that like, you want to go to the roulette table with him just because everything he does strikes gold?
Yeah. I mean, really I loved mainly the going to Stuart Skinner in game six of the second round, when you're still trailing in the series and you need to find your way back, because if the Oilers were ever going to have a chance in a series against Dallas, they would have needed Stuart Skinner to be the guy. So the chutzpah, the fortitude to say, you know what, we'll take the risk now that he's ready and that he's rested and that all of his demons on the ice are behind him. Let's put him in as we try to get back in the series. That works out. And he plays great the final two games of the series. But man, oh man, last night, some of the lineup moves he made, I would not have made in a million years. You mentioned Corey Perry. This man put two players who did not play in the previous game. Corey Perry had not played in the previous several games. He put two players who were healthy scratches into the top six next to Leon Draisaitl, who, despite being one of the best players in the world and one of the best players this postseason, had not registered a point in the last two games. So he puts those guys next to him and gets a result. Shocking. He puts Philip Broberg, who hadn't played in over a month and is essentially a young AHL player, into the lineup. That pays off. He sits Vinny Desharnais, who I did not think was a problem on this back end, on his birthday, and the team still gets a result. So everything that he does, even if it's not what I would do or the casual fan would do, has paid off.
Yeah, I watch these moves and I wonder if maybe like not having the scars that other tenured NHL coaches allows you to make decisions just like, hey, I believe in this.
I kind of think it'd be the opposite, right? Like everyone's so risk averse. This guy's brand new, maybe his only gig. And
but he's
making
not
those
gonna
bold
get, but he's
moves.
Not going to get fired. He's kind of playing on free money right now.
Yeah, but does he even have like a long-term contract? Like
he's
coming in on an interim basis. Maybe he is, but for him to make these moves shows you that it doesn't have to be as risk adverse as it normally is in the NHL.
I mean, that man is worry free. Sometimes he's even feeling free. It looks like, I don't know if you've seen some of the bench reactions to certain big moments, big goals. He's looking up at the clock afterwards, like as if they had just allowed a goal. Mm. So it's, I don't know if you're fans of I Think You Should Leave. We discuss a lot on the we discuss with various coaches. That guy yells. Chris Knobloch is not a that guy yells. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when the going gets tough, you almost want there to be some emotion. But we know through various players, through various coaches over the years, you don't need to be super emotional to get a result. And at this point, I just think that he's some kind of genius because he's doing things that I don't think I'm a genius, but that I wouldn't do, that anybody I talk to would not do. And yet, Ryan McLeod, second line left wing, pays off in spades. Who'd have thunk?
He's working working some magic in Edmonton. Okay, last one for you, DJ. We appreciate your time tonight. Edmonton's looking to become like a championship city. Obviously, being in the Boston area, you've seen some championships in your day. We would be so lucky to have the same resume. So what does Edmonton have that can bring them like the required traits of a championship team?
Well, the one thing they have is the fine line between frustration and elation. Billy Joel would term it sadness or euphoria. Like there's a very manic thing going on that you're so stressed watching the games and it means so much to you. But when the going gets good, you see a sweetness and a celebration in it that that a Rangers fan or even a Bruins fan at this point just can. They've been too happy too recently. Even like the Rangers, for example, like they've won the President's Trophy this year. They're feeling themselves. They understand that they are favored when they play certain teams. The Oilers, this is everything to them right now because they've got the best player in the world. They've got another MVP who's got 1 year left on his contract after that. The stakes are so high and the passion is just overflowing that when the moss pit gets going, you are seeing a joy there and you are seeing a party there that is incapable of being had anyplace else on the planet right now.
Oof, imagine if Toronto were ever to get there, then we'd have all of those things as well, I think.
The Bostonian in me says, I can't imagine it, but one day, maybe. I struggle to imagine it, but it has to someday.
Well, you did just have a team lose a championship in PWHL Boston, so you can join us.
Is it losing your touch a little bit?
Yeah.
Is Boston now due for a title?
Oh, God.
Maybe the Celtics, those scrappy Celtics who are the best team in the NBA all season, now maybe they can catch a little bit of luck.
Well, we won't be cheering for any Boston teams.
Understandable.
All right.
We don't deserve it.
No, you don't. We do appreciate your time, though. This was really great. Hopefully get a chance to catch up before the Stanley Cup is awarded, which is in like 4 months because we just got the schedule. It's going to take a while. So DJ Bean, appreciate it. And everyone can watch your What Chaos show. It's awesome. And say hi to Pete for us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks so much. That's DJ Bean, host of What Chaos. What Chaos was last night.
Mm.
And this entire inaugural season of the PWHL, it has been
a little more chaotic end of game four.
Yeah.
But chaos last night, nonetheless.
There's a lot of firsts. Obviously, this whole season is about winning the first ever championship Walter Cup, winning the first ever MVP, being the first ever inaugural pick. And Taylor Heisey, who's joining us now, has accomplished a lot of firsts this season. So, Taylor, congratulations. Thanks for jumping on. I hope you don't have champagne in your hair still.
No, I don't. Washed that out last night. But thank you for having me, to be honest.
Yeah, we were so honestly privileged to get a chance to chat with you after what's been an amazing year. And I know you probably have a lot of reminiscing that you're just beginning. But, like, let's go back to that game four, because you basically won the Walter Cup twice. Like, you really did. You so nice, you won it twice. Tell us about the situation of game four. You win, the goal's called back. You have to put your gear back on, find each other's equipment, and then ultimately lose that one in a heartbreaker, and then have to regroup and go to try to win in a must-win game five for both teams.
Yeah, it was definitely a mindset change. We did talk about it today. We're like, we're the first team to ever win the cup twice.
There you go.
In 1 year. So, yeah, it was definitely a heartbreaker. That one made it hard for me to fall asleep after game four, for sure. As a competitor, none of us obviously want that to happen. It was quick. Like, I don't even think I had the right gloves on, to be honest with you, and still was playing in that game. So after that, obviously, it's disheartening. But we just knew that, you know, if we came out strong in the way that, you know, we've played all year, we were going to be just fine, and just had to weather the storm a little bit. But it was such an exciting game. And obviously, game five, that's what you wake up every single day for. So.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you, if everyone had the right gloves, because there's no way everyone had the right gloves. Like, there's zero chance that was going to happen. And yeah, like, that was kind of like a perfect sports moment, right? Where it's on a knife edge, or it just turns in a flash, where you guys have to regroup in that moment, but you got to regroup for a game five and the chance to win it for the second time. Like, what was the key for you to put that in the past? How did you stash game four away so that you could focus on game five and have the effort you guys did last night?
Yeah, I think we let it sting for a little bit and kind of just went from there and knew that, you know, it's a special moment to be a part of, no matter if you lose or win game four. Just to get to game five and be able to compete for a championship is a special time and a special moment. So I think just for me personally, I let myself relish in it, kind of looked a little bit deeper and said, like, did I do enough in that game four to help us win? And just said that I got to dig a little deeper and make sure I do exactly what I can to help us win game five. And I think as our team, we knew we didn't want to go back to Boston. We obviously wanted to win the cup in Minnesota, but life happens and you got to kind of roll with the punches. So, you know, we obviously, like I said, didn't want to go back to Boston, but we knew when we were there, we're like, we got to get this done with. We're here, we're ready to show up, we're ready to do what we need to do.
You guys had quite the, I guess, mentality change, I think, throughout the last couple months. Obviously, the stretch towards the playoffs wasn't a great one for you. You get picked by Toronto to be the opponent, and I'm sure that was bulletin board material. Like, how important was the leadership of your team, the experienced players in terms of being on the world stage, being at the Olympic stage, being at the national championship stage, to say, you know, we have the right pieces in this team. We're not the team that, you know, lost four or five straight games into the playoffs. We're not the team that should be picked first by Toronto. We're more than that. Like, when you think about the dynamic of this team and how you ultimately win an entire season in this Walter Cup, what changed from about midway through the last couple months to now?
Yeah, I kind of mentioned it a little bit, but it's that mindset change. And I just honestly think we needed to get our swagger and confidence back. And even for me, like, when you lose that many games, I haven't lost that many games in my life in a row, I don't think. Now I can say that I have, obviously. Like, just feeling slightly defeated, but just realizing, like, you're doing all the right things. Things are just not clicking. And, you know, sometimes it's hard to work through that. But, our leadership is great. They've been on every single stage you can think of at the highest level. And, you know, they just pretty much told us, like, we this is something to worry about. Don't get me wrong. But we have everything we need right here. We don't need to go out and look elsewhere for things. We just need to come in here and make sure that we don't have those, like, crazy games where we're freaking out at each other on the bench, where our PK, you know, we are like 1 for 5 at one point, which is a horrible statistic. All those things are, you know, mindset changes, and our leadership group did a really good job of making sure that, you know, we were able to quantify that as a group.
So it would have been pretty appropriate if yourself or Michaela Cava put that one in the empty net to ice it last night. But it being Kendall Coyne seemed to like make a lot of sense when talking about sports and script writing. What did Kendall Coyne mean to this group? Like it made a lot of sense for her to put that in, to hoist the cup for the first time. She's a USA hockey legend. She's part of the reason why this league exists. What did she mean specifically to your group?
Yeah, she's special. She's a special lady. She's a special hockey player. She's done so much for this league and for this group, whether that's this year, last year, or 10 years ago. So she's, you know, she's done it all, and she's done it on every single level, and she's helped out. I don't know how she has time in her day to care for herself at this point because she has so many other people that she helps and leads and things she's had to help get off the ground. So, you know, we had a moment with her yesterday, and I'm really happy she was able to lift that cup and celebrate with her family and her young boy. It's just, you know, it's a special time to see her living out her dreams and doing, like, well, like I said, some badass shit. Like, she does so many things that I look up to her and say, like, I want to do that. Like, I want to do that. And I don't think I will, my body will survive what she's gone through and still working and kicking at her age. And we always joke about it. She's like, don't, because I had joked about someone being older the other day. And she goes, don't look at my age. And I told her, girl, if you're faster than me, I'll never ask you what your age is. And I go, so you're probably good for life because you're always going to be faster than me.
Okay.
She's special.
Oh, God. Sure. I can imagine last night's party was a fun one as well. And we actually had we had Kendall on about last week or a week before that, right after Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And I asked her, how great would it be? You know, the Walter Cup has a kind of a bowl to put Drew in the cup. And she laughed it off. She's like, oh, yeah, you know. And then I see yesterday she's putting baby Drew in the cup. And he's amidst some of the celebrations.
He was not having it. He was not having it last night.
Yeah, you know, it's a lot of spotlight.
And he started bawling his eyes out again. So we were like, oh, we got to put his little headphones on. But he was good after that.
Oh, it was really sweet. We saw as much as we could, I'm sure, through social media. But as much as you can tell us, what's the party like for the first ever Walter Cup champions? Right. Like, what goes on? I saw champagne. I saw Maggie Flaherty doing the splits. I saw baby Drew in a cup. Like, give us the scoop. Yeah.
So I had to go and get my MVP trophy, so I missed a little bit of the setup in the locker room. But when I walked in, I was handed a bottle of champagne through the door, and I walked into our locker room. And it was already covered in clear things to keep all the champagne off the walls and our gear and clothes and stuff, which is honestly sick, and it happened so quick. And then obviously when we waited for Kendall to be done with all of her mother duties and doing all of her interviews and such, we came in, popped some champagne, had a great time, got back on the bus, loaded our gear, and then we went to a bar with all of our families and friends and got to just hang out and listen to our favorite music. That's one of our hobbies as a group. We love just to jam the music together. And then we went back to the hotel and continued the party there for a little bit.
It looks like tomorrow you'll have your championship celebration at XL Energy Center. They already had to make it to a bigger venue because of the demand. I don't know what you know in terms of how fans can come celebrate, but like a parade, a meet and greet, they get to see the cup. Like, what's on store as you begin this little championship tour?
Yeah, that is a great question. We have no details.
You get to write your own script.
I'm as clueless as everyone else. I think I do know it's at the XL Energy Center tomorrow from 5 to 7. There'll be photo ops. You'll be able to see Walter, Walter's home. So it's going to be really fun. It's going to be good. So I think it's going to be a big celebration, and it's one well worth it. And we're very excited to share this not only with our team but with the group of Minnesota hockey fans that have been behind us the whole time.
All right, Taylor, I know you've got to go in a minute, but we'll ask you just one last thing, and I know you're probably going to be asked this a lot, but you got to play in the very first ever season of the PWHL. There was probably a lot of growing pains, a lot to learn on the fly, but where can this league go next? Like, what can we as media do, fans that are listening, supporters? Like, where do you want to see this energy in season two? Because season one's easy to get excited for. It's the first this, the first that, but how can we continue that energy and that support in season two?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think, you know, we broke boundaries this year that people didn't expect to happen. And it's something that is awesome to see. It's something that you want to continue. And I think for right now, you're always going to have the people who don't support and hate on everything that we do, whether that be over social media or, you know, in person. But I think for us, just continue to support it. It's such an amazing league. And, you know, we've proven with all the sellout arenas and everything we've had so far. But just continue to show up and support this league and this group. And no matter what team it is, you can be fans of anyone or you can be fans of just one team or one person. It doesn't matter to us. We're just excited to have people in the door and just prove that our game is worth watching and our game is worth listening to and paying attention to. It's not a girls' game. It's a women's game. I think, you know, when you think about hockey and contact, we bring it all at this point, and we've had a great time doing it. So I would just say continue to support. Come to games, buy merchandise, and just kind of understand the game, because I think our game has had some, you know, rule changes and things like that, which has really brought a lot of great media attention to it. So I think continuing to evolve and just supporting, like I said.
Well, you guys got to be a part of history, first ever for a lot of things. So congratulations once again. It was an amazing season getting to cheer everybody on and watch the success of the PWHL. Enjoy the next couple weeks. I know that there's already the draft, the awards, free agency, all this excitement to come. But you guys get to be the champ, so let it soak in, and we appreciate your time, Taylor.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. That's Taylor Heise of PWHL Minnesota champions, first ever inaugural Walter Cup champions. She's our first ever playoff MVP, and Justin and I, we cashed in big on a Taylor Heise playoff MVP bet. So thank you, Taylor Heise.
We appreciate that.
Going to pay for some golf this summer.
She is, like, she's on the short list of faces of the league, right? And I, honestly, like, north of the border, Marie-Philippe Poulin, Natalie Spooner has this MVP season. But Taylor Heise from jump, right? Because she's the first overall pick, and she's kind of, she was the face of that moment, like the launching of the league. Now she's the face of the first ever Walter Cup final and the playoff MVP, like bookending the season with Taylor Heise moments. Like, if we're talking about someone, and she said it, like, you're listening to her talk about it, pretty convincing, right? So, I think she's, like, one of the most important people for this league to build around, and for her to come through in that moment to start the season as the first overall draft pick, to end the season as the MVP of the playoffs, like, that is quite the debut for a really, really important player for this league.
Yeah, 14 months of Taylor Heise's life was a world championship gold. She led the NCAA in goals. She's the first overall pick in the inaugural PWHL draft. She leads the team in playoff goals and points. Then they win their first ever Walter Cup. Then she wins the first ever playoff MVP. It's just, you're right. Like, honestly, Minnesota had a lot going for them, and they had a really tough stretch of games. And I think, myself included, wrote them off. You know, they, whatever. Toronto was dynamite. I got friends on
Toronto
Montreal.
Toronto owned the PWHL for, like, the balance of the season, pretty much. Started slow.
100%.
Looked like they were unstoppable.
So we were talking Toronto about all these teams got nothing. Then they go on that incredible winning streak. And now Toronto's the team to beat. Toronto picks Minnesota. Minnesota fights their way through the reverse sweep. Then they go to Boston. They play Boston. They win. They lose. The goal getting called back. Like, the ups and downs of that season for that team. And I think, like, Taylor Heise mentioned it, but Kendall Coyne is really the story, I think, of this team. We had her on about 2 weeks ago when we talked about her story with her new documentary, Hockey Mom. And I know her well enough to know that, like, that is just the tip of the iceberg. She is so selfless and humble and driven, and, like, probably loses sleep at night thinking about the shots she missed and the passes that didn't happen. Like, she is so hungry for success. And for her to have her son Drew and come back is one thing, but for her to spend the last X amount of years building this league, like, she is one of few girls that really drove this league from nothing to something. She was in the room with Billie Jean King and the Walter Group and Stan Kasten and saying, listen to us, we have something here. And she was the one to say, we're not settling. You know, we want this. We deserve this. And look, she's the first captain to ever hoist a trophy. Like, it gives me chills knowing what she did with a lot of other support, but being one of the faces of this team to get it over the finish line and to get this league over the finish line. Like, it is really the perfect story. And, I mean, I mentioned it to Taylor there when we were saying goodbye. It's already season two. Free agency or re-signing period opens up June 1st. PWHL draft is June 10th.
Team names, logos in August, right?
Yep. Awards are June 11th. So Heise might, you know, they'll be around. free agency opens June 21st, and then August, we should know the names, we should know the logos, we should know a lot more, and then the season's going to start with training camps. Like, it's exciting. They're not going to get much time for downtime, but they really deserve a victory lap. Like, everybody that made this happen, from the players that really believed this was going to be a league that would work, to the fans, like, credit to all the fans, new fans, old fans, fans of one league that ended up being fans of a new league. Like, we don't even talk about that. There is people that really didn't want to cheer for one side of, like, LIV versus PGA. You know, we had that same kind of thing. And they
there were some hard feelings there.
And like, but they want to cheer for women's hockey.
It coalesced in a way. Like, I didn't expect that to be, like, this major issue, that there were, like, factions, right? But all of that was set aside. All weapons set down. Yeah. And everyone just got on board in a way that, I think, it exceeded Taylor's expectations, ours, the entire league, everyone involved. It was an absolute home run of a debut season.
And think about, like, just the broadcasts from all the networks sharing this season and having it on YouTube and having the accessibility worldwide and having, you know, fans from all over get a taste of women's hockey. The behind the scenes, the sponsors that came on board every week, the PWHL is tweeting out this sponsor, new sponsor, new sponsor. Like, people were buying in and investing in this league, and it's going to be a very, very hard season to top. And that's why I asked Taylor. It's like, it's so easy for us to be excited about the first this and the first that and first draft, and now it's season two. And so, like, keep that same energy. That's, for me, if I was a player, I'm a former player, I know that it's easy to get excited when it's the hot thing. You know, we're going to have a WNBA team in Toronto in a few years. It's going to be lit. But, you know, when it's season five, are you still lining up to get into the arena? Are you still lining up to buy merch? Are you still excited? Like, that's what I really think we need to continue to bring energy for us, because season two is just even more important than season one.
Not to diminish Minnesota or Heisey or Kendall Coyne Schofield, but as much as it seemed like it was perfect, right? Rookie of the year is the MVP, and Kendall Coyne Schofield, a foundational member of this, having a moment like she had last night in Minnesota winning. Like, you could have wrote that story for a lot of the franchises, right? Which is the best thing. Montreal, you have Marie-Philippe Poulin, who's been carrying the torch for us north of the border forever. She would have been in the Kendall Coyne Schofield position, and you would have a young player for Montreal doing, you know, what Taylor Heisey was able to do. Same thing for Toronto with Natalie Spooner, et cetera, et cetera. You go down the line, and that's what made it successful. It's not just one thing that had to happen. All these teams had something to offer. It gives everyone a chance, and it gave every market a chance to really have this thing grow.
Yeah, so congratulations to Minnesota, to Taylor Heisey, to all teams, players, fans, everyone on what was a really exciting season. I already miss it. But we'll take a quick break. We got a lot to go through on our show still. We're going to tee up tonight's games. Maybe we take a look at what happened yesterday in the world of the PGA Canadian Open.
The Pro-Am circuit.
The Pro-Am circuit. And City Connect jerseys for the Toronto Blue Jays are about half an hour away from being released. We'll get your input. You can text us at 590-590. What do you want? What would you put on the Toronto Blue Jays City Connect jersey? They haven't had one yet. This is a big moment for Toronto and for jersey lovers. So we'll be back on the Fan Pregame.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to the Fan Pregame Sportsnet. It's Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Let's take a look at some action tonight. I'm a Rangers guy through and through, so let's go. Rangers plus money tonight, but I got even something better for you. How about to go to overtime? Because that's their thing. If you want the Rangers and the Panthers to give you more hockey, because it's been pretty good, plus 330 for an overtime showing tonight. So either Rangers on the money line or Rangers in overtime, because live a little.
More chaos, even.
Yeah, I feel bad for the more chaos guys, because as you mentioned, like, in case our listeners didn't know, their show, What Chaos, we had DJ Bean on earlier in the show. They go live on YouTube.
Which I will say is probably the best idea I've seen from them.
It's awesome.
Like, having Gene Principe on regularly,
I mean, they love Gene too,
is a great idea, but that is an awesome idea.
It's like, oh my God, we're going into overtime. They jump on live. Like, what if you know, you're laying down horizontal in bed, you better get up and get on your stream. So poor guys have had to do it a couple times, but I like overtime.
I'm going to go to game 5 of the Western Conference Final in the NBA. The Mavericks are on the verge of advancing to the NBA Finals, but they are pretty sizable dogs tonight, plus 165. Listen, I think the Minnesota Timberwolves can get back into the series, but I do also think that Luka Doncic will have some urgency tonight. A little banged up. He's been banged up all playoffs long. He gets, what, 8 days off if they can get a victory tonight? If this is prolonged, not only will it affect their chances of advancing, but how they might perform in the NBA Finals against the Boston Celtics. I think 7 days off would be unbelievable for Luka Doncic and the Dallas Mavericks to get ready for Boston. So I think we'll see some urgency from them tonight, and they advance to the NBA Finals with a victory plus 165.
I love that. That's one of my favorite picks. I just think that they got to close this thing out. Everybody gets their rest. Focused in on a final, and plus 165 is crazy. Okay, so tonight in about half an hour, the Blue Jays will be debuting their City Connect jerseys on their social media.
This is a big deal, by the way. Like, this has been...
it's a huge deal.
This has been one of the most talked about jerseys. Because in the NHL, it's like every day there's a new jersey that goes on social media. And I get we're like Toronto, and this is one of the few teams that all of Canada owns. But it feels like this is a bigger deal than most jersey releases.
This is what I think we know. I think we know that there's going to be a skyline.
Okay.
I think we know.
What are we basing this on?
This
leaks?
Leaks.
Blake
and
Murphy.
Internal
Blake
information,
Murphy
possibly.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what I would think. I think there should be a skyline.
Sure.
I think there should be some incorporation of the CN Tower, since that is what we have in Toronto.
It's in the backdrop of the Rogers Centre.
I think that those two would make a lot of sense. I'm sensing a purple theme. If you went through any of the Blue Jays Twitter, whatever, posts over the last bit, some of the players have been wearing purple. Some of the posts have had these sneaky purple things. I think purple...
I dig purple.
Do you
dig purple just in general?
Yeah, PWHL purple.
There you go. Minnesota.
Maybe that's what they're trying to piggyback
Taylor Heisey
on.
Would be all over these jerseys.
But other than that, there's a lot of leaks going around online, so buyer beware. I do think we're going to see something different than the leaks.
Underscoring the point that this is a big deal, Jose Bautista and Edwin Encarnacion are like in town getting ready to be a part of the, you know, the, I guess, the merchandising process tomorrow.
It's a smart move.
Like, as they transform the Jay shop, they're going to have two Jay's legends there.
Yeah.
I guess sporting these jerseys.
I think it opens at 8 a.m. tomorrow.
Yeah. And they'll be there.
So tomorrow will be the jersey debut on field. Monday will be a Vlad bobblehead giveaway, and he's wearing the City Connect uniform. They'll also wear the uniforms again on the field. Wednesday, June 5th, which is next week as well. Wow, it's already June. Whoa. Blue Jays backpack giveaway, plus the City Connect design wearing the uniform on field. So there's going to be a few opportunities to see them live. And then, of course, you can go buy them in person. And we are going to be seeing them in person tonight at a location where you can also see the skyline. I thought about that when I was coming in. They're smart.
You're galaxy branding this thing.
The skyline is on this jersey. I just, if there was odds on it, I'd be pan.
Yeah. Is that the best way? Like, I think we're going to like these jerseys. We like purple. We like the skyline. But, like, is there, when you thought of this, when you thought of City Connect, and this was, like, the Jays are one of the last teams to get a City Connect jersey, if I'm not mistaken. What did you have
coming
in your mind? Like, is the skyline the thing that makes the most sense?
Does.
Is there another option we could have went down or another road
skyline
we could have went down?
I think the skyline, because the Blue Jays already have the red and white Canada Day jerseys, and that, to me, would have been the next best thing. Lean into being Canada's team. Well, they already do that. They already have the red jerseys, which are kind of cursed, actually, so that people don't want them to wear them because they lose every time. But I think if you're going to be City Connect, it's your city. What's Toronto? It's the skyline. It's the CN Tower. It's the Gardner being shut down to one lane. It's, could they have little flashing red lights?
It's the inability to find a parking spot.
Yeah, could they have, like, a red line that you zoom in and it's actually just the bumpers, brake lights of cars? There would be some, you could make like mockery of this. I don't want to do that. I think they're going to be wonderful, but I'm sure people have, and you've seen online, have had funny submissions.
Yeah. I saw like a TTC inspired one, which is kind of cool. Someone's eventually has anyone officially leaned into the TTC?
No.
And like tried to make it part of a rebranding of some sort
of like a team.
Yeah. It seems like it's always a mock-up rather than like a,
no, I'm good without the TTC being involved.
You're not into the Red Rocket?
What would you put on it?
I don't know. I'm not the best person to ask this. I do like the St. Louis one a lot, where it just says the Lou and it has like the two.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, it's pretty much similar.
I don't think the six is like the thing that you want to lean into anymore.
Yeah, are we over the
but
six?
I guess that would be the comp to the Lou. But then, you know, the Raptors have kind of done that, right? They've leaned heavily into
the OVO world. Did you miss the boat to be a part of that?
I think
kind
they have.
I think that's a Raptors thing. You got Drake as the global ambassador. You can't just be like, we want the six now.
So they're paving their own way here.
Anyway, you bet 20 minutes so you figure it out. But we'll see. It'll be online tonight, and you can buy it and rep it. And I think there's a hat that goes with it, too.
There you go.
I'm not a hat guy, but I did buy a little bit of merch yesterday. I'll tell you that.
Okay, let's get to it. We got about 5 minutes left in the show. You played in the Canadian Open Pro-Am yesterday.
Oh, baby, did I ever.
How was it?
It was honestly, Justin, maybe the coolest thing I've ever done in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I wish
You've
I could relive.
Cool,
I know. That's a privilege to say. I honestly wish I could relive yesterday. It was so awesome. Got a really great squad I went out with. Our tee time was at 1:30, so I got to Hamilton around, like, 10:30, walked around the course, walked around the merch, checked out the place. You're just treated like royalty, too. Everybody's a beautiful human, just like lovely humans.
Everyone is a beautiful human there?
Yeah. Okay. Like, the volunteers are just wonderful people.
Okay.
They're so joyous. You shank a tee shot and they're like, way to go.
They just kick it into the
they're
fairway
so
for you?
They're so nice. And everyone was just lovely. It was so smoothly run. Everyone that did a great job of Golf Canada, of course, and it was just wonderful. My team together, there's four amateurs and one pro. We had the first round pro was Callum Tarrant, who unfortunately,
tough day today,
I believe, is tied for last today.
How was his game
really
yesterday?
Really nice guy, though.
Was his game good yesterday? And just
I'm worried
apart?
That we screwed him up. Like, did he blow it today because of us yesterday? Nonetheless.
You were one of the last pairings, so maybe a little fatigue.
We
after
were
a long day.
Really on the course for a long time. Nonetheless, so we started we started on the back nine with Callum Tarrant, who's lovely guy, didn't shoot well today. Then we did the back nine with Chandler Phillips, who's an American, like, super young kid. They just graduated from Texas A&M like a minute ago. I'm trying to find his shot today, but he was pretty good. I'm trying to see where he's at today. Nonetheless, we had so much fun. My squad of amateurs with the pro, we shot a combined 10 under.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely contribute
good?
To that.
Like,
yeah.
The
best
under?
Score was, I think, 17 under.
So were you like mid, like in middle
yeah,
of the pack?
Yeah, we were middle of the pack.
Okay.
Pretty good. One
who
guy.
Who won?
I don't know who won.
You just
it wasn't
scores.
Me, okay? I just saw that we weren't in the top and I
okay.
threw my putter to my caddy. And I said, get me out of here.
Nick Taylor style?
Yeah. Awesome day. I shot really well. Personally, I was very
That's
proud
great.
Of my game. One thing that was different was we teed off at 1:35. We weren't back in the clubhouse for the 19th hole until 8-something p.m.
Mm-hmm.
It was the longest round of golf I've ever played. I was actually just fatigued. Like, by the back nine, I was starting to hack away at it. Just, you know, you're standing on your feet all day. You walk the course. It's very hilly.
So the pros only play 9 holes.
Yeah.
But you said it was about 7 hours, 7.5 hours.
Yeah, it took us
that
long. Cut
that in half. It's like 3 hours on the course for yep. these guys who are playing in a full tournament this weekend with $1.5 million
mm-hmm.
To the winner. I'm a little surprised that they put the pros through like the rigors of a full pro-am, but you know, the more you know, right?
I think it's also the guys we were golfing with and when we saw around the course, they're getting a really good opportunity to check out like how the course is playing, they're playing it. Like, they don't get to go play it last week. They got a chance to see everything up close, like the two pros we were with and the guys ahead of us. Oh, you know what? I'm gonna try this putt again, or I'm gonna do a different chip. Like, I didn't like the way that I hit this tee shot. Like, so they would sometimes play something over again as a good like, this is an opportunity for them. Really, they're gonna be on the course in 12 hours on the same hole. But I'll say the rough was rough. Like, the ball went in there. Good luck. You were like chainsawing out of there. But everything is so pristine. The way they have it ready for like the championship tournament. I will never play a course that nice or hard in my life. So I'm honestly just, it was an amazing day.
David Skins is currently leading the tournament 8 under through 17. We got about a minute. Any starstruck moments? Anything that left you in awe?
Yeah. Somebody
other than how nice
people
everyone
came
was?
Up and knew who I was, which I thought was just beautiful. And they said nice things about our show.
I thought you were going to say like Rory McIlroy was warming up.
I wanted
up
to
two
say
feet.
That first, but the most starstruck I was
okay.
was on the warm up, on the driving range. you are driving your ball beside the pros. So I'm up there taking tee shots, and three people over me is like Sahith Thagala, and I'm just like shaking at the tee, trying not to hit anyone. And the pros are hitting beside you, and their ball is just soaring, and it's so beautiful. And mine's like, plunk, plunk, plunk.
I'll give you credit. You kept it together.
I did keep it together.
Tough course, tough conditions.
The hardest thing I've ever done was that first tee shot, I'll tell you that.
It was right down
the
middle.
My stomach, straight down the middle.
May have touched a little grass, but it's okay.
I had so much fun. But anyway, I hope to get a chance to do it again next year. It was a blast. Let's send you off into the night. We've got Dallas, Minnesota, Sportsnet 1. Sportsnet's got Florida, New York. We'll be back tomorrow on the Fan Pregame.